So welcome back, everybody. I hope you managed to get coffee in that long line. For the afternoon, we're going to have several presentations from members of the group, and I'm going to just introduce the speakers. The first speaker will be Andrew Karapolis. He joined the group in 1998, and he's going to talk about uncovering new therapeutic targets for patients with X-linked hypophosphatemic rickets, and he's not going to tell us what PEX is about.
Well, thanks for the invitation. It's really an honor to be here. How do we move forward? I did. It's not.
Right.
Okay. Another left. Oh, there you go. All right, thanks. So I'll start my talk with a preface that this is not going to be a talk about gigantism. In fact, as you can tell, it's going to be about patients with X-linked hypophosphatemic rickets. This is a patient that I've been following at the hospital for X-linked hypophosphatemic rickets. And just to put it in perspective, this is a disorder that has a prevalence of about 1 in 20,000. It is an inherited disorder. It's associated with short stature, rickets, and osteomalacia, and lower extremity deformities and bone pain, tooth abscesses, and as well as enthesopathies. This is an entity that has not been clearly characterized as we would like. And in fact, these patients actually present with low serum phosphate or hypophosphatemia. And despite this hypophosphatemia, these patients actually also exhibit renal phosphate wasting. So at the same time, while they're having low serum phosphorus, they're actually pouring phosphorus into their urine inappropriately. And despite the fact that they're hypophosphatemic, they also have an inappropriate response for getting an increase in the serum 125 levels. So this is basically a situation where you have hypophosphatemia, you're wasting it, and at the same time, you cannot make 125 to make up for it. This is something that actually I found that says that Eleanor Roosevelt said that small minds discuss people, average minds discuss events, and great minds discuss ideas. And I brought this up because this is the paper that actually for the first time described the murine homologue of X-linked hypophosphatemic rickets. This is a paper by Charles Scriver and Francis Gloria, where basically they discussed the strain of mice that was actually identified in 1966, in which these animals exhibit a shortened trunk. Their hind lips are short, and they have actually, by back-crossing them, they found that the mutation was shown to be dominant and X-linked. And these animals do exhibit the low serum phosphorus and the renal phosphate wasting that is associated with the disease. And that, therefore, they were actually referred to as the hip mice for hypophosphatemia. And as you could see here, basically their serum phosphorus compared to wild-type mice is decreased, but at the same time, they're pouring out phosphorus in the urine, as shown here. It's interesting that in the same paper, there was an acknowledgement for a number of individuals that are present here, including Rod and Dr. Richard Cruz, and of course, Susie Tenenhaus, for the assistance in these studies, which I found relevant to this presentation. So here we are, and here are the mice. Basically, as I said, recapitulating a lot of the human presentations. Again, the shortened limb of the animals, and of course their hind limbs that are much shorter than the normal wild-type mice. And you could tell from their tail that this is another sign, of course, that we use to identify these animals because of the tail is short. In a paper that Susie Tenenhaus with Heine Muir published subsequently showed that the reason that these animals actually are wasting phosphorus into the urine is because they cannot hold onto it, and that's because the sodium phosphate cotransporter, which is, The sodium phosphate cotransporter, which is found in the renal tubules, is actually diminished both at expression at the messenger RNA level as well as in the protein level, showing that, in fact, this is the reason that they cannot hold on to the phosphorus and it's wasted into the urine. In 1995, they actually identified the gene that's responsible, and Roy discussed this gene already. It's called the PEX gene or the FEX gene, which is responsible for X-linked hypophosphatemic rickets. This is an endopeptidase. As you could see, it has a very short cytoplasmic domain. It has a transmembrane domain and an extracellular domain that actually resides outside of the cell, and it's supposed to be doing what it's supposed to be doing, that is probably acting as an endopeptidase, but we have absolutely no idea 15 years later what this protein actually does and what the substrate is of this protein. So a lot of work that is presently undergoing to identify the substrate. 5 years later after this event, actually the FGF23 was identified. This is the so-called phosphatonin that people have been looking for all these years. And this came out of studies looking at a form of hypophosphatemic rickets that actually is inherited as an autosomal dominant form of the disease. And in this disease, basically, you have a protein that has a signal sequence. It has homology to FGF. It has a C-terminal domain that's basically totally unrelated to FGF, any other FGF protein. And if you cleave it here, it basically inactivates the protein. And the mutations that are found in these patients with autosomal dominant hypophosphatemic rickets is that this sequence that's required for cleavage to occur is mutated. So therefore, these patients cannot cleave the protein, and therefore the protein stays longer in the circulation and leads to the hypophosphatemic state. When FGF23 enters the circulation, it acts at the level of the kidney, where it requires, it binds to the canonical FGF receptors found in the kidney, but at the same time, it requires a co-substrate, and that substrate is clotho. Clotho is a protein that has been associated with aging. We still don't know the relationship of all these proteins, but if you don't have clotho, FGF23 cannot bind to the FGF receptor and signal downstream. So you require both components to do so. And finally, for the historical perspective, very recently an autosomal recessive form of hypophosphatemic rickets has been identified. And this is related to a mutation or inactivating mutations in the dentin matrix protein 1. This is an extracellular protein that is residing in bone, and it inhibits the FGF23 expression. And if you don't have it, FGF23 expression increases. So to summarize, basically we have both the XLH, the autosomal dominant form and the autosomal recessive form, mutations in FEX, FGF23, and DMP1. In all cases, FGF23 is increased, and in all cases, the tubular reabsorption of phosphorus is decreased, but the synthesis of 125 cannot keep up, and it's, in fact, inappropriate. So this is basically the interaction that we think is happening here, that basically within bone, and the bone communicates to the kidney, is that both DMP1 and FEX inhibit FGF23. FGF23, when these proteins are not around, is released, enters the circulation, goes to the kidney, acts with clotho to inhibit the sodium phosphate cotransporter and inhibit the synthesis of 125 by inhibiting 1-hydroxylase activity. So with this background, we actually started looking in the system by generating transgenic mice that overexpress FGF23. So, several years ago, we showed that, in fact, if you look at these mice, that indeed the sodium phosphate cotransporter expression is decreased in these mice. But surprisingly, we found that although you would expect that it inhibits 1-hydroxylase, in fact, the expression of 1-hydroxylase was increased in these mice. that's the messenger RNA. But if you look at the protein, that expression was diminished about 50%. So it we still don't know how FGF23 accomplishes this, but it seems that the effect of FGF23 at the 1-hydroxylase level is to inhibit the post-translational expression and or survival of the protein rather than its expression. And there's still a lot of work that we're undergoing in the laboratory to try to define this part of the action. However, at the same time, we looked at the 24-hydroxylase. This is the enzyme that adds the 24-hydroxylase on vitamin D. And in these mice, it was very highly expressed, suggesting that this is another form by which 125 is diminished. So when we looked at HIP mice, and I'd just like for you to concentrate in the square areas, also in HIP mice, the 24-hydroxylase was increased. So when we look at this scheme now that I have put up, we have come up with an additional component here, which is basically what FGF23 does. Not only does it inhibit the 1-hydroxylase, which is the synthesis step, but it also activates CYP24, which is the 24-hydroxylase, which is the deactivation step. So not only does it prevent formation, but it prevents, it activates the breakdown of vitamin D. Because of that, we decided to to identify what the role of CYP24 is in the phenotype of XLH. So we actually took HIP mice, which are basically the homolog of the human disorder, and crossed them to the CYP24 negative mice. These are mice that were given to us by René Sedano from the Shriners Institute. And we created animals that are HIP mice, but at the same time, they do not express CYP24. And we looked at what happened to these animals. And in fact, what we found is that when you take off CYP24 from these mice, there is a remarkable recovery that occurs with regard to their bones. This is the HIP mice. You could see how short they are. You could see the growth plate of these animals. Okay, there's no mineralization. And you could see what happens when you remove CYP24 from these animals, that actually you recover back the normal phenotype. This is a scanning electron, micro-CT scanning of the bones, again showing the remarkable recovery that actually occurs within the growth plate compared to the HIP mice shown here. And of course, just another section of these things showing that the spleen that is so classic of the rickets that occur in patients and in the animal model is actually reverted by just removing CYP24 from the picture. And what was even more surprising to us was that these all changes that we saw occurred despite the fact that these animals are still hypophosphatemic and are still wasting phosphorus. So this was totally unrelated to what was happening to the phosphorus level in these animals. It was always thought that it was the phosphorus that was the problem. But in fact, what we're seeing here is that despite the fact that we don't correct the phosphorus, the bone phenotype corrects itself, shown here. So because of that, we said, is it possible now to manipulate? Can we manipulate CYP24 activity in these patients, hoping for a therapeutic modality? The idea is that up to now, treatment for XLH has been in skeletally mature patients has been basically to use oral phosphate and calcitriol with a lot of complications, and for the most part, the type of recovery that you get in bones is not complete. So we hooked up with a company called Cytochroma, which basically makes analogs of vitamin D, and we obtained a vitamin D a CYP24 inhibitor. So basically is a vitamin D analog that acts very specifically to inhibit CYP24. And I'm not going to go through the details, but showing how the specificity with regard to CYP24. And what we did is we took animals that were HIP mice that were about a month old. Already the deformities are beginning to take place. And we injected them daily for 8 weeks. And we looked after 8 weeks what happened to their. We're still examining it, but just to let you know that we're in the process of analyzing the samples. But again, what we saw was a remarkable recovery In the bone phenotype of these mice, despite the fact that already a disease has been set in for over a month, that in fact you get this progressive mineralization that's occurring, and of course the cortical thickness that is lacking in the hip phenotype. And again, we were unable to change the concentration of calcium, of phosphorus and or calcium in these animals. Basically, it's telling us that what we're doing is affecting vitamin D metabolism at the level of the tissue, at the level of the bone. So just because these hydroxylases are residing in other tissues, not only in kidney, that by inhibiting these hydroxylases in the appropriate fashion, we can actually manipulate local concentrations of 125, thereby changing the phenotype of the bone without necessarily changing the circulating levels of the electrolytes. So in summary, we have identified CYP24 inhibition as a novel therapeutic target in states with high circulating levels of FGF23. Just to tell you that FGF23 is not only elevated in these rare conditions, but it's also found in patients with chronic renal failure. So this is the utility of this agent is beyond its the immediate obvious therapeutic potential. And of course, we're now looking to use the combination of CYP24 inhibitor with calcitriol to see if it's more effective than current therapeutic modalities in the hip mice, and of course, subsequently in patients with these disorders. So I'll stop here. Thank you very much.